Alright guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my not-so-rapid reaction to the Falcons signing a defensive tackle to Terrell McClain.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, the host of this podcast, and you can, of course, find me on Twitter complaining about something at FalcFans. So today we're going to be talking about the Falcons signing of Terrell McClain, what his fit is, what his role is here in Atlanta, what you can expect from him, as well as sort of talking about, what's going on at the D-tackle position. The Falcons signed him on Friday. This is a not so rapid reaction because you're now listening to this on Monday or Tuesday or whenever you listen to this podcast to get the thoughts on that. And so we had now a whole weekend to mull this over. You guys sort of, if you've been regularly listening to this podcast since the draft, I've been talking about how the Falcons still have holes at the D-tackle position even after selecting Deidre Snott, just because they needed to get a fourth defensive tackle. They just couldn't really go into, in my opinion, training camp with the quote-unquote plan of Garrison Smith, Justin Zimmer, Joey Ivey, John Cunningham competing for that spot and feeling good about that. As I said on a recent episode, like, Garrison Smith is better than I probably gave him credit for initially after the draft, but like, I wouldn't sit here and be like, that guy's definitely a guy that could be a fourth defensive tackle. He's more of a guy that, like, yeah, he could be a fourth defensive tackle. You don't have a better option, but I don't think that's the plan. So the Falcons wind up getting Terrell McClain. Let's do a little background on Terrell McClain for those of you guys that are a little unfamiliar with him. He's a 7-year veteran. Last past season played for the Washington Redskins, got cut right after the draft after they wound up selecting Daron Payne and Tim Settle in their draft class. McClain wasn't necessarily a good fit in their 3-4 defense. He's played in 3-4 defense prior to that, but that's not really the scheme that he best fits in. Played a little bit of nose tackle, played a little bit defensive end. But prior to him going to Washington this past season, he spent 3 years with the Dallas Cowboys, where he was a teammate of Jack Crawford. That's really been the highlight of his career, those 3 years in Dallas. Played well as part of their rotation, was a starter in 2016, starting 15 games that year, and that was his most productive season, where he had 2.5 sacks and 40 tackles. Going back to where he was originally in his career, he was a third-round pick, the first selection in the third round in the 2011 draft, out of South Florida, Deidre Snott connection there. I remember when Terrell McClain came out, like, I had like a 6/7th round grade on him. I don't really distinguish between those two rounds in my grading system. But and then to see the Panthers take him at the top of round 3, I was like, whoa. We can consider that a reach, or as some people may not like to hear the word, overdrafted. But that did not work out too well for Terrell McClain nor the Panthers. McClain really struggled that his rookie season, got hurt at the end of it. I think he had a knee injury or something like that, and wound up getting cut the following year. And, it was interesting because the Panthers drafted 2 D tackles in that third round of that year, and McClain and Puha, Sione Puha, and both of those guys, is it Puha or Fua? Whatever. There was a guy named Puha that played in the NFL. I think maybe he was Fua. Doesn't matter. And both those guys were basically gone within 2 years of them being drafted. And that sort of directly led to the Panthers in 2013 using their top 2 picks on Star Lotulelei and KK Short. So if you have enjoyed, as a Falcon fan, if you have enjoyed the presence of Star Lotulelei and KK Short these last 5 years, you can go ahead and thank Terrell McClain for that and him not being good. And, after the Panthers cut him, he bounced around the league for a couple of years, played in Houston, played in New England, then wound up in Dallas in 2014, where, he became pretty good again. So he's got experience playing a multitude of techniques in the league, has played in the 3-4, has played in the 4-3, but has been at his best as a 4-3 defensive end playing that one technique role. Just in a bit, we will continue to talk about Terrell McClain and talk about sort of his contract situation, exactly how the Falcons envision his fit in the defense. But before we do that, I want to plug the Locked On Podcast Network. Of course, you are probably a Falcon fan checking out your favorite team and your favorite Locked On Podcast host and Aaron Freeman talking amazingly about your favorite football team. But, the Locked On Podcast Network has NBA, MLB, and of course, NFL teams. So if you want to get caught up during this time of where not a whole lot is going on, you certainly can find that on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, McClain signed a one-year contract worth $4 million. We'll get the exact details, maybe. We'll see. Andrew Brandt reported it is over $4 million with a $500K signing bonus, which maybe some of that's incentives, but I was a little stunned by that contract, a little stunned, not necessarily blown away by it, but I was like, oh, that's a little bit more than I probably would have thought. Kind of knew he wasn't going to be cheap in the sense of, oh, we'll get him on like a one-year, $1.5 million deal, just because there were several other teams that were looking at him and showed interest. And as you guys well know, this is part of the reason why free agency works the way it does. When you have multiple teams bidding for your services, your price goes up. Oh, wow. Oh, my God. I didn't even have to take an economics class to know that. So, it's interesting because McClain now is basically the second highest paid defensive lineman on the Falcons roster behind Vic Beasley. He's paid a little bit more than what Brooks Reed is making after a restructure. He's paid more than Jack Crawford. He's paid more than Derek Shelby. I think at this point, beggars can't be choosers. I think, as I said, the Falcons really needed help at that D-tackle position. He was in demand. And, besides Jonathan Hankins, you can certainly argue Terrell McClain was probably the best option available in terms of who the Falcons could pursue. I would argue that he's a better pass rusher than Hankins this was my issue with Hankins last year, even though I was willing to bet on his talent last year when the Falcons were looking for a D-tackle, but like, this dude is slow. I mean, like especially in Indianapolis, playing like as a 3-4 guy last year and being a run defense, like unless the Falcons were going to sign Hankins, and they probably would have to pay at least twice as much to get Hankins as they did McClain, and then put in similar to what they did with Poe, and be like, yeah, you could need to drop like 20 pounds because if you don't, you're not doing anything. So I think you can make the argument that McClain was the best bang for their buck in that sense. So, I'm not faulting the Falcons if they, quote-unquote, overpaid for him. Again, beggars can't be. At this point in time, you needed a guy. You kind of had to pay a little bit of a premium for a guy if you wanted to get somebody decent. You could have cheaped out and gotten somebody who wasn't good but saved, $2 or $3 million. You could have done that, but I'm not going to fault the team for not doing that. Why would I, that's a whole thing. But, so the interesting thing with McClain's contract, why I'm going on and on about it, is it suggests that his role will be a lot bigger than what sort of me in my head initially was thinking that this team needed, which was a guy that could play on base defense in as a three technique that would keep Grady Jarrett fresh. With the contract that McClain is making, you would think, oh, this guy's going to be a much bigger part of the Falcons rotation. And I do wonder about that. And you do wonder, oh, does this now mean that he's going to split reps with Jack Crawford in nickel situations? I wouldn't be so sure about that. Terrell McClain's not really much of a pass rusher. He's okay. He's not terrible. He's not incompetent or anything like that. But I don't think you're really signing him because you're like, we can't wait to see what Terrell McClain does rushing the quarterback. Like, he can do some things. But when you look at his most productive year in Dallas, over that three-year run he was in Dallas, his most productive year as a pass rusher on a snap-to-snap basis, at least based off of Pro Football Focus metrics, he was about as effective a pass rusher as Jonathan Babineau was on a snap-to-snap basis in 2017. Or in 2016, Babineau's last year here in Atlanta, when we all sort of, even myself, could admit that he wasn't really bringing a whole lot to the table. He might have been bringing a whole lot, you know, in my opinion, he was bringing more to the table than Courtney Upshaw was, but like that's not really a low bar to clear. You know, Courtney Upshaw, who, you know, has a, like 4 career sacks in like 6 years or something, you know, so that's what, you know, it's not a low bar to clear. So I think if you're expecting McClain to be a part of the nickel rotation, I wouldn't necessarily assume that just because that's not really what he's been good at. So I think really what McClain is being brought in for, and you know, the Falcons are going to ask him to be a key part of their base defense. And when you look at his role in Dallas, when he was at his best, he was primarily a one technique in their base defense, which is a nose tackle. And I think, you know, it's interesting because that's sort of what the Falcons have an overabundance of on their roster already. That's basically what Deidre Sanat is. That's basically what Grady Jarrett has been the last 2 years. That's what the Falcons, you know, obviously he's not on the team anymore, but that's what the Falcons had in Ataba Rubin last year when they picked him up. So, you know, you do wonder who's going to play that three technique in the base defense. Is that Jarrett? Is that Sanat? Is that McClain? It's not going to be Jack Crawford. You can already rule that out. They're not going to put Jack Crawford at defensive tackle in the base defense. I pray to God that they're not doing that. No offense to Jack Crawford, but it's just like, why would you take a defensive end and put him? Like, it just doesn't make any sense, right? And, you know, I think Jarrett becomes your obvious choice, right? You look at those players. Your options are Grady Jarrett, Deidre Sanat, Terrell McClain, right? And you're like, oh, Grady Jarrett, of course. He's going to play the three technique in the base defense. Makes the most sense. He played three technique in the base defense last year when in the second half of the season when Ataba Rubin came in. But the problem with that, or here, my problem with that, is that kind of is going to wear down Grady Jarrett, right? You know, he's going to play every snap in the nickel. Like, you're not taking him off the field in your nickel. Like, him and Tack and Bick are going to play every snap in the nickel. So, at a minimum, they're going to play, you know, 64 to 67% of the plays on defense in the nickel. And then you're going to wear him down in the base defense because you don't have a better option there as a three tech, you know, and it's not to say that he'll play every snap in the base defense, but he'll play some, and then that just wears him down. And that, you know, and that's, you know, that's not good, right? That's not good. Like, could Grady Jarrett do it? Of course he's that good that he could do it. But like, why would you want to do that, you know? And so that's really where I've been talking about these last couple of days/weeks of why the Falcons needed a three technique to play in the base defense for the sole purpose, if for nothing else, than to keep Grady Jarrett fresh so that we can get the best version of Grady Jarrett on those key passing situations that, you know, is why you get paid the big bucks. When the Falcons pay Grady Jarrett $12 million a year, it's not going to be because he led the NFL in tackles for loss. Right, you know, that's part of it, but it's going to be because the Falcons think he's a 5 to 8 sack guy, which for a defensive tackle is very, very good. So that's why the signing of McClain is a little curious. That's why I'll use the term curious, because McClain's primarily a one tech. Sanat is primarily a one tech. And so it's like, okay, if those two guys form the base defense on the majority of snaps, who's going to be playing that three tech? Who's going to be playing those 20, 25 snaps at the three that's going to keep Grady Jarrett fresh? And I think that's going to be the thing to watch in training camp. If I was looking at one of those two guys to do it, I would probably say Sanat makes the most sense, given that he's younger, he's a little bit more moldable. You know, McClain is a veteran that, you know, you don't want to necessarily square peg a veteran because you'll get what Washington got last year a little bit. I mean, to a certain extent. So it's like if McClain has proven over time that he's better as a one tech, as that sort of hold the point of attack one tech, then it makes more sense to play him there and then just kick Sanat over to three tech. And it'll be interesting. I think that'll be interesting because Dan Quinn specifically referred to Sanat as a nose tackle after they drafted him, which means a one tech. And so you wonder if maybe the Falcons are like, oh, don't pay any attention to those, to what we said before. We'll figure it out. And so that's probably what's going to happen. Like, you know, over these mini camps and OTAs and training camp, they'll figure it out. And so I'm not I'm not worried about it. I'm curious. That's all I'm saying. I hope no one's taking it as me being like, this is a problem. It's not a problem. It's just, I am curious how the Falcons figure this out. And so I'm just curious how the Falcons figure it out. I think because Sanat has a little bit more upside as a penetrator than McClain does, then you probably play him a little bit more at the three tech. Maybe you just sort of switch him in those roles. You know, and I think it's important, and my curiosity, I guess, is a little bit because, you know, if the Falcons wind up using another high pick on a defensive tackle next year, which at this point in time I kind of expect, you know, this is additional data in addition to sort of what they had with Poe last year when he was playing the three tech as opposed to the one technique that I think most of us expected he would play when we signed him. It's like, oh, okay, maybe the Falcons don't sort of use the three technique or view the three technique in the sort of traditional way that most other teams do, which is you want a gap-splitting penetrator at that spot. Maybe they do want more of a sort of hold-the-point-of-attack, one-technique guy in that role. You know, and it makes sense. You can argue why they would want that just because they have smaller, lighter linebackers. So, you know, holding the point of attack is a little bit more valuable when you have linebackers that need to be kept clean. So again, that's why I'm curious about how the Falcons sort of figure this out more so than it's like, this is a thing that matters. It doesn't matter at the end of the day. It's just something for me to talk about on the podcast and for you guys to listen because we're in May now. And what are you going to do? Watch baseball? Yeah. All right. But we got a little bit more to talk about with Terrell McClain. But first, I want to remind you, in case you do want to watch baseball, why don't you go and check out LockedOnSports.com? That is part of the Locked On Podcast Network where you can find your one-stop shop for NFL, NBA, and MLB content, podcasts, written content, and more. Again, that's LockedOnSports.com, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So I guess we should talk about techniques because we've been throwing those terms around a lot in the last couple of months, particularly in the lead up to the draft. And maybe some of you are like vaguely aware of what I'm talking about, or some of you, I'm sure some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. And some of you are like, I kind of know what Aaron's talking about, but I don't really know what he's talking about. And some of you are like, I just been faking it until I make it. I figured at some point you would explain it. So I'm going to explain it a little bit. And so when I'm talking about these techniques, for me, the techniques only really matter in the base defense because techniques, in my opinion, only really matter when it comes to your run fits and your gap assignments. So when I'm talking about a three technique or a one tech, I'm only referring to the base defense. I don't really care what technique a player is when we go to nickel, and those are primarily pass rushing situations. Because I don't think run fits are as important in those situations. It's not to say they don't matter at all, because you do have to stop the run sometimes in a nickel. But it's not nearly as important. You know, for example, like you look at Claiborne last year, who, if I recall correctly, didn't play a single snap in the base defense last year. But over the course of the entire season, playoffs included, he wound up rushing the quarterback roughly about 450 times last year. And wound up having to be asked to play the run about 150 times last year. So in the nickel, last year with Adrian Claiborne, who was our most used nickel player, I think, other than Jared and Poe, there was about a 3-to-1 ratio of pass to run in the nickel. Now, you look at the base defense and you break it down, again, on average, it's closer to like a 1-to-2, maybe a 1-to-3 ratio. Of pass the run in the base defense. So that's what we mean when we talk about, like, you know, not going too deep into the rabbit hole of what's nickel and what's base. Like, base, you know, we traditionally say base are early downs or run downs, but it's not really about down and distance, about personnel, which determines why you're in base versus nickel. If your other team's in three wide receiver sets, you're going to be in nickel. If another team has two tight ends or a fullback on the field, generally speaking, you're going to be in base. You can run those personnel groups. Teams can run three wide receiver sets on first down, or they can go two tight ends on third down. You know, and so that typically determines, at least I would argue early on first and second down, typically personnel, generally speaking, most teams, including the Falcons, are going to be in their nickel regardless of the situation on third downs, unless it's like a third and one or third and two or something like that. But again, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. But I just want to explain to you that the techniques only really matter, in my opinion, when, or at least when I'm referring to techniques, I'm only talking about the base defense. Like, I don't say Grady Jarrett plays this technique in the nickel. Like, it doesn't matter to me. He plays whatever technique that helps him get to the quarterback. You see what I'm saying? And so to explain what those techniques are, the one tech lines up over the center, outside shoulder. And basically his job is to control the A-gap. The A-gap is the gap on either side of the center between him and the guard. And so whether the one tech lines up on the left or the right doesn't really matter. Whatever A-gap he is basically lined up over is the gap that he's supposed to control. The three tech lines up over the outside shoulder of the guard and lines up basically his job is to control and penetrate the B-gap. And the B-gap, as you can guess, is the gap between the guard and the tackle. And you can go, you know, the even techniques, the zero, the two, the four, the six or whatever. Or not the six. We'll throw the six out for a second because it's going to confuse people. The zero, the two, and the four basically means that player is lined up directly over the offensive lineman. So the zero lines up directly over the center. The two lines up directly over the guard. The four over the tackle. The odd techniques, the one, the three, the five, are typically shaded over the guy's outside shoulder. The one is over the center shoulder. The three is over the guard. The five is over the tackle. And, you know, there's flexibility here. And it's not as if like, oh, he plays one technique, which means every single snap he plays one. No, it's like you shift and you'll see, you know, you'll watch the games and you'll see Grady Jarrett shift over and Deion Jones will come up and tap a guy and say, shift here and fill this gap. And so it's not as if like it's a strict thing. Like, this is the position that you play and you never deviate from that. Maybe that was the case in 1975, but that's not the case in 2018. And so you'll see guys play like a 2-I, which a 2-I is basically you line up over the guard, but you're shaded inside the guard's inside shoulders. So you're still kind of playing the B-gap, but you're not necessarily, you know, it's a thing. You know, what I'll do is I'll link to Inside the Pylons article that breaks down the 4-3 under defense, which is the scheme that the Falcons employ under Dan Quinn. It's a very brief overview of sort of where guys align and what are their gap assignments and whatnot. It's just a little brief overview. And that will sort of be your, you know, I guess your index or whatever that word is to understand what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the techniques. And I'll put that in the show notes over at falcfans.com. But now we can wrap this episode up. And I think, you know, sort of in summary with McClain, I think he's going to help out the defense. I think he's certainly going to help out the run defense. I think he gives him really more of a body as a pass rusher. Not really any guy that's going to move the needle there, but I certainly think he will give them a boost in the run defense. You know, I still expect Jack Crawford to get the majority of the pass rushing snaps beside Grady Jarrett on the nickel situations. I think, you know, the team might sort of, in order to get fresh bodies there, you could see situations where they kick Tack McKinley inside. I think there are situations where you will see Derek Shelby in that role. I think there are situations where you'll see Deidrin Sinat in that role. And I think there are probably maybe situations where Terrell McClain is in that role. But I would expect McClain to probably, on those players I listed, would probably last on the hierarchy. Just because traditionally that's not really what he's been. Now, he could come to Atlanta and be great, you know. Now, my general rule of thumb is I don't expect a player that has been coached by Rod Marinelli to be coached up by Dan Quinn or Bryant Young. No offense to those guys, but Rod Marinelli is widely considered to be the best defensive line coach in the NFL. So I think it will be interesting what McClain does in Atlanta, what his role is going to be. I think he's a solid rotation piece. I think he helps boost the run defense. I certainly think he's going to help keep Grady Jarrett fresher in some capacity, whether that's taking snaps at one technique and allowing Deidrin Sinat to take snaps at three technique. But some, in some way or form or fashion, Grady Jarrett should be better because of Terrell McClain's presence, because he's not going to have to be overworked. And I think sort of the plan with the Falcons is like, though, you know, he's not really a second D tackle. He's certainly overqualified to be a fourth D tackle. So he's really kind of a third guy, which maybe probably bumps Sanat down to be the number three guy, I guess. I don't know. I mean, the number four guy. But I think between Crawford, McLean, and Sanat, you're getting a competent second D tackle to sort of plug and play opposite Grady Jarrett. It's like, okay, Grady Jarrett's good. Tack's good. Vic's good, right? We know Brooks Reed and Derek Shelby do their jobs. And we'll just sort of, between those three guys, we'll just figure it out at the other D-tackle spot. And I think that's basically what I'm interpreting what the Falcons are going to do. I think this is a good move in the sense of, I think it gives Sanat a year to develop and doesn't force the Falcons to have to rely on Deidre and Sanat to have to play a bunch of snaps. Like, you guys may not remember, but like his rookie year, I think Grady Jarrett played on average like 10 or 15 snaps a game. And, you know, he was a fifth-round pick, but we all knew he was more talented than that. Now, the Falcons had a much deeper rotation. I don't know whether having Tyson Jackson qualifies as a deeper rotation or a declining Jonathan Babineau. But they had more bodies at the position. Solei was also there in 2015, if I'm not mistaken, right? So they had more bodies there. But than they do now. But it is interesting to me that, like, even though Grady Jarrett was really good for the 10 to 15 snaps he played as a rookie, you know, that'll be something that we'll talk about later on when we get to the Deidre Sanat scouting report later this week. But I do wonder, like, maybe people were putting a little bit too much on expectations on what he would do as a rookie for those reasons. It's just something to think about. So I think McLean does help out in that way, gives Sanat a year to develop without forcing him to have to play a ton as a rookie, without the team having to rely on a rookie, as we've seen with Terrell McLean when he was a rookie, or a number of other D-tackles when they were rookies. Traditionally, you don't, like, D-tackles aren't a position that often come into the league and hit the ground running. That's just my observation. There are, of course, exceptions to that, but generally speaking, like, you guys have to take wait the better part of 3 years before your defensive tackle is good, for the most part. Obviously, Grady Jarrett would defy that, but most other D tackles, historically speaking, for me at least, and certainly guys that are generally more talented than Deidre Sanat, I think, typically have taken the better part of 3 years before you can really sort of like, that guy's good. So I think McLean at least buys the team a year before, in case Sanat falls into that category. We'll see. I think, you know, he also sort of buys the team a year to, they can address their D-tackle needs next year. And I mentioned this briefly before, but, and it's May of 2018. And I'm going to, in a minute, talk about something that may or may not happen in March or April of 2019. And so I say that clearly to indicate that this is way too early for me to be talking about this stuff, and I'm well aware of me being too early to talk about this stuff, but I don't know. I'm just sitting here thinking, looking at the team and looking at where I expect certain position groups to be this season. And I would say that if I'm looking ahead to 2019's draft, I would guess that the team's top three picks in some order will be guard, defensive tackle, defensive end. And I think what McLean does is he sort of buys you a year to get to that point. He's a stopgap. That's basically what he is. He's a bit of a pricey one, but that's basically what he is. And he can be a good stopgap. You know, ain't nothing wrong with a stopgap. Don Terry Poe was a very expensive but very effective stopgap. I don't expect McLean to be as effective as Don Terry Poe, but he can be, I don't know, like a third as effective as Don Terry Poe, maybe. I don't know. That makes sense to me. So, it's fine. Like, it'll be cool. It'll be fine. So, we'll see how it plays out. I don't expect, you know, D-tackle to be like a strength of the roster this year, but it'll be fine. We'll make it. I hope. That's it, guys. Appreciate you guys tuning in and listening to my ramblings about the D-tackle position. And we'll be back with a fan talk possibly tomorrow, I think. If I need to check my schedule. Probably should have done that before I got on this podcast and started recording. And of course, we'll have later for you the Dietrich Sonat Scouting Report. So those are two things you can expect this week. And in the meantime, if you want to get in on this action, if you're like, hey, what's a fan talk? Well, my friends, fan talk is when I talk to you, the common people, you know, the peasants out there, and we talk about football. You, the fans. And if you want to get in on that action, you, of course, can send an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. Give me your contact information, your availability. We will do a number of fan talks during the summer. I already got like three people lined up over the next week or two. And you can throw your hat in the ring. We'll try to get new people on initially. If you send those in, rather than some of you, I know some of you guys that have done previous fan talks have also indicated your interest in doing so, but I'm going to punt on you guys to a certain extent to try to get new people on. There was one person in particular that I told in September that I was going to have him on, and I kind of forgot about it. So that is a person that's coming up in the near future. So I apologize to that person. You know who you are. We have been emailing back and forth. So, I'm just a bad person that way, you know. You guys know that, though, so fine. But until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.